I will only mention a few of the most powerful and shocking miracles, miracles that may sound unbelievable to some people. However, these are all realities and historical events known by everyone in the area. I will continue with one great miracle that took place in the years of the German occupation, when the cross was in the hands of my mother. In those days, the Germans apprehended about 500 men, and they had kept them locked up in the public high school. They left them without food and water for about 3 days, and a large committee approached the bishop to intervene with the commanding German officers to allow the committee to take food and water to the captives. The bishop, for reasons that he would only know, did not intervene, and no one else in the entire area was found to take up such a daring and courageous feat. They were all afraid of the consequences. My mother heard this, and without wasting a moment, she collected food and other pertinent supplies from the three nearby villages by the grace of the Holy Cross. She also boiled as many eggs as she could, and she took everything to Vrathimno for the captives. While approaching the school, the German soldiers pointed their guns at her. She was not fazed, and she took all the food and the other supplies, and she gave them to the guards. Naturally, they could not communicate, but by the help of an interpreter, they asked her what was the reason of her visit. She told the interpreter, "Please tell the officer that I do not have a single relative in here, and if they doubt me, they can ask all the captives, and if they find one related to me, they can punish me as they wish." But as a woman of God and as a mother, I feel for all of their mothers who are anxiously waiting for them, and I thought to make the effort to bring them some food. If it is not too much trouble, they can go ahead and give it to those people inside. Otherwise, they can use the food any way they want. It seems that the commanding officer was a good man, and he granted her request, not excluding the possible influence of the grace of the Holy Cross. They opened the door, and my mother walked in. You can imagine the excitement and cries of joy of these poor people who fell on her, and they said, "No, we don't care much about food, but we need a little water because we are dying of thirst." Outside of the school, there were two buckets of water. She kept refilling them from the spigot of the schoolyard from morning until noon, going back and forth until all the 500 detainees had satisfied their thirst. When she finished, being at the state of exhaustion, she thought to pass from the bishop's quarters. He saw her full of joy, and he asked her what was happening with her. She said, "Your Grace, I'm sorry that I didn't pass to see you earlier, but I was busy all morning," and she explained everything she had done for the prisoners. He was dumbfounded. He got up and hugged her. He called her, "Dear mother, you are worthy of honor. Congratulations. The witnesses at the court were right. From this point on, you're free to do whatever you want." And from 1944 up until the time of her death in 1975, she was free to go anywhere she wanted without any kind of hindrance. In 1945, I left for the junior high school of Hanya. My mother was coming to visit me often and to check up on my progress. And in the process, hundreds of people found out about the grace of the Holy Cross, and they were flocking to her. Especially drawn to the Holy Cross were many couples with problems of infertility. Many of them became parents after being blessed by the precious cross. And let's listen to a great miracle in this area involving the general governor of Crete, Emmanuel Bakladzis, who went to become a member of the parliament and later on the president of the Greek parliament. He was married for about 12 years, but the inability to have a child was hanging like a dark cloud over their otherwise happy marriage. God did not give them a child, and they were greatly saddened. He did, however, learn about the grace of the Holy Cross, and he brought his wife to my mother, requesting her prayers so God would give them a child. After the blessing with the cross, the couple brought to life a healthy little boy, and the governor was elated and, wanting to express his gratitude, requested to have the child baptized in my mother's village, Rustica, and in a church that she rebuilt herself. So one afternoon, they left from Hanya, and they were heading towards Rustica to complete the sacrament. However, he removed from the car the official insignia of the governor, and this seemed rather suspicious for the guards of the army base in Ceuta, who suspected that the governor's car may have been stolen, so he ordered a roadblock. The police signaled the governor to stop and explain their action. The governor, in turn, explained to the officers that he's on his way to baptize his child in Rustica, and he was trying to escape unnecessary publicity, so he removed the insignia from the car. So my mother baptized this child, and she became a godmother again for the 680th time. She had solved infertility problems for about 480 couples, all by the grace of the Most Precious Cross. About 200 of them were born with some health problems, or their parents may have been facing a health issue, so they promised the child to be baptized on the day of the Holy Cross, or they vowed to call the child Stavros or Stavrula, and after their baptism, they regained their health. Can you imagine having close to 700 godchildren? This is enough to show the magnitude and the amazing grace of the Most Precious Cross of Christ. What was finally of significance with my mother, she was granted the gift of foreseeing the outcome of the workings of the Holy Cross. In other words, she would be able to tell the visiting people if they would become well, or if they would need an operation, or if they needed to take some prescribed medicine, or sometimes they would tell them that, no, it's God's will for you not to become well. Interestingly enough, she had an excellent relationship with the medical profession and the doctors. In Chania, the pathologist and the radiologist, when they would hear from the patients that Mrs. Hadzina sent me here, they would ask, what was her diagnosis? And they would say exactly what my mother had prognosed. To their amazement, time after time again, their professional diagnosis totally agreed with my mother's prognosis. Based on this, I will tell you an amazing diagnosis that was initially rejected by the doctors, but it was finally accepted. This event happened to my mother herself. During the German occupation, she went to a village called Saitures to cross some of the sick. On her way, however, she was thrown off her horse, possibly by demonic energy, because during those days she had healed some demon-possessed lady, but this only God would know for sure. While falling off the animal, she landed on a stone and she ruptured her gallbladder. This took place in 1946, and she finally had an operation in 1952, and for all these 6 years, her body functioned without a sound gallbladder and without any harm from the loose bile flowing into the body. She decided to proceed with an operation, and she made arrangements with the Blue Cross Hospital in Athens. Mr. Bakladzis, who happened to be the president of the parliament, we spoke about him earlier, at that time took her to the best specialist, one of the professors of the Medical School of Athens, and he introduced her to him, and he requested to give her the best possible care. He specifically said, please watch over her better than you would watch over me. And whatever needs to be done, do it at any cost. The only thing is, I would like you to do the operation yourself, Mr. Bakladzis added. And how do you know that an operation is even necessary without an examination, the doctor asked. You will understand more when you have a chance to speak with this woman. The professor was a good and faithful man, on the one hand, but on the other hand, Mr. Bakladzis was a respected high official. But he could not accept all this information prior to a medical examination, so he proceeded with the examination. What problems are you having? He asked my mother. 6 years ago, I fell off my horse and ruptured my gallbladder. How do you know this? Did you have an x-ray? No, but I know. This is what happened. But this is a physical impossibility. You cannot be alive. You cannot live long with a broken gallbladder. You would have died long ago. This would create major complications with your liver. Your liver would be gone. My dear doctor, I'm telling you that this is my problem, and when you proceed to open me up, please do so, but do it in the exact opposite way. Start from the opposite side that your profession tells you. Well, this is absurd, and the doctor calls Mr. Bakladzis to cross-examine this strange patient. Look, Mr. Bakladzis, she's telling me some strange things, not to mention absurd things, totally unorthodox to our profession. What are we to do? Well, I tried to warn you, Mr. Professor, that this woman is not your average woman. You'll find some strange but yet very miraculous things, and you will do very well only if you listen to her. So after extended and multi-sided examinations, they decided to proceed with the operation. The surgeon gives instructions to anesthetize her, and she tells them, "Doctor, don't bother. Anesthetics don't work on me." "What do you mean? How are we going to operate on you?" "Well, very well, whatever your profession teaches you, and you will see." They administer the necessary anesthesia. She seemed to have fallen asleep, and the professor said, "She's anesthetized, so let's proceed." My mother was not speaking. He took the scalpel, and he attempted to make the incision from the position taught by the medical profession. Before he touched her, she tells him, "Doctor, did I not tell you to start the incision from the opposite side?" "Panayamu, help me." The doctor shouted, "She's awake." "Do precisely what I'm telling you, and you will see." After all this, the surgeon was convinced, and he followed her directions. And lo and behold, they could not believe their eyes. They saw a thin insulating membrane covering the liver, protecting it from the caustic effects of the bile. In other words, this membrane was keeping the secretions of the bile ducts outside of the liver, keeping it unharmed. In the event that the bile would flow towards the liver with its known emulsifying properties, the liver would have been dissolved and death would have prevailed long ago. The obvious question is here, how did she manage to stay awake during this operation? How did she bear the pain? With the grace of the Holy and Venerable Cross and the ascetical life that she lived, her entire body was basically senseless. It was already permanently anesthetized. The operation was completed and she became well. Through this process, she got to know the doctor very well. They became close. And she went to bid him farewell before she left for Crete. The medical professor, who acknowledged on her person all these special gifts and the miraculous powers, he tells her, "Since the precious cross works so many miracles, this hospital will now be renamed the Precious Cross of Christ instead of Blue Cross." So this hospital was renamed, and it's called Thymios Stavros to this day. From this great miracle, one cannot help but marvel the diagnostic grace that she was given by God. After this operation, she lived another 23 years. She became ill very many times, and many times her heartbeat became very weak from the exhaustion and the long hours of standing on her feet, the caretaking of the church. She was single-handedly rebuilding her village church, the cells, and all the other structures of the property. But what was especially taxing physically was the blessings and the crossings, the stavromata, as we say in Greek, that she did to thousands of sick people who flowed towards her on a daily basis. One of the doctors of Heraklion pulled me aside and assured me, "Patra mou, my father, you're her son, and I must tell you the truth. Her heart pulse is dangerously low. Be careful because she can die any day while standing. Try to convince her that she must avoid standing and must avoid getting tired excessively. She must stop all that for a while if you want her to live much longer." So I went to her with this information of the medical doctors, and I added, "Mother, I understand the great grace of the Precious Cross, and I also understand that people are in great need of your services, but they can simply come to venerate it on a table stand. They can receive its power and grace that way, and then they can leave. You can no longer stand up all day to cross them. You've done enough. You must rest now." She turns and looks at me with a smile, and she says, "You're a priest. Now, assuming that you are very sick in bed, and they come and tell you that an infant is dying, come and baptize it. Would you get out of bed to go, yes or no? Or would you let the baby die unbaptized?" "Well, I would have no choice but to go." "Then why are you expecting me to sit on my bed to abandon my line of duty? I want to die standing in my line of duty, and God can give me as many days as he wants. I will not abandon my line of duty, and God can do as he pleases. And from now on, I don't want anyone to get involved with my work and my mission." After this, she lived another 6 years, being always tired, always ill, to the point of exhaustion due to the excessive work necessitated by the many spiritual and physical ills of the Christians whom she served wholeheartedly. And we now come to the summer of 1974, a couple of days before the feast day of her church, Holy Transfiguration. The church on its feast day always had great attendance, but this year the crowds were especially greater. About 5,000 people came from all corners of Greece, and my mother blessed people at three different occasions during the day, Vespers, midnight, and during Matins. And assuming that she only blessed 2,000 out of the 5,000 people, that still brings the number to about 6,000 crossings. She was standing for hours while streams of perspiration were running down her face. The people used to dry her face with their handkerchiefs. I tell her again, Mother, let the cross in the middle of the church so the faithful can venerate it by themselves. Don't overdo it. Go lay down a bit. You will die. My child, I told you before, and I'm telling you again, I want death to find me in the line of duty. That year of August 1974, she blessed with a cross thousands of people while refusing even water during these hours. And by the grace of God, she did not suffer anything at all. All of us who knew her state of health and the warnings of the doctors were crossing ourselves in amazement. This alone shows the great and miraculous power of the life-giving cross. The following year, during the feast day of August 6, 1975, she was in bed sick. Disregarding her illness, she got up. She prepared all the necessary requirements for the feast. She gave the necessary directions, and she lay down on this bed that you see right here. The people began to gather from everywhere. Vesper started, and the people were passing through here to greet her. The next day, she was listening to Divine Liturgy, lying down on her bed. After the Divine Liturgy, a meal was always served to all the pilgrims, and after the liturgy, everyone was passing to greet her while taking the bread of artoklasia from her hand. After everyone served and ate, she asked, were the people served well? Did they have enough to eat? Yes, Mother, they were all very satisfied, and they are finished. Very well. And now my time has come. And instantly her mouth filled with blood. When people saw the blood, havoc was created. 3-4 doctors ran to her aid, but there was not much hope. She was pretty much spent. At that moment, a pilgrim was approaching who resided permanently in the United States. He had heard and he wanted to be blessed with the cross. And while coming into the church grounds, he asked, where's the Gerondissa? They told him, unfortunately, she's very ill and she cannot see you. She's being checked by a number of doctors. He said, I came all the way from America for this reason, and I will not be deemed worthy to be blessed with the sign of the cross. And we hear my mother calling him from inside, let him come in because he will be the last person I will cross. He went inside. She blessed him and told him, you are fortunate because you happen to be the last person I will cross. And so it happened. The next day, on the 7th day of August, she slept in the Lord, one day after the feast day. And on the 8th day, her funeral service was being carried out. A funeral like my mother's was unprecedented here in our area. Bishops, dozens of priests, and thousands of people came to pay their last respects. Many eulogies, many talks, and much honor and appreciation was shown toward the deceased. In short, this was the life story, the action, and the Christian service of my blessed mother, Hadzina, and Gerondissa Philothei, who's now resting at the right hand of the Lord. My father slept in the Lord in 1946. My mother was tonsured a nun at the Holy Land in 1953, where she had visited about 10 times. On one of these trips, she brought back a large cross given to her by the patriarch bearing his signature and a special dedication. This cross was placed in the altar of the third church she built, named in honor of the Precious Cross. The other two churches were built in the honor of the Transfiguration of the Savior and of Saint Spiridon. The purpose of her wishing me to become a priest was so I could bless the people with the Holy Cross without having to face the obstacles she encountered being a woman. She divided her estate with a will to all my brothers and sisters, and she left the cross as part of my inheritance. The monastery she left in our name to be kept as is, we cannot sell it, but we are to provide it for free to any monks or nuns who wish to exercise their life of monasticism in it. And as you can see, it is fully equipped. So far, in all the aforesaid, you saw very many miracles carried out by the grace of God through the precious cross, and all these are enough to convince even the most unbelieving human being. However, let's mention another two, three, which happened during my tenure of the precious cross, extraordinary and quite shocking to say the least. The first one involved a doctor from Chania named Konstantin Bozakakis. He was a colonel in the army, a military doctor, and he also operated a clinic in the city of Chania. As far as I'm concerned, this was the greatest of miracles because this doctor was a godless unbeliever. He suffered from cancer and he had undergone 9 operations, 4 in Athens and 5 abroad. After every operation, the doctors were assuring him that this would be the last one and he would become well. They simply removed the malignant growth, and after a few months, it would emerge again and again, finding himself in and out of the operating room 9 times. From the upper part of his sternum all the way to his stomach, there were 9 different slanted incisions. He had become a walking skeleton of a man, and he could not eat, drink, or sleep. After the 9th operation, he resigned from the army. He closed down his medical clinic and he awaited death. His brother-in-law, the brother of his wife, and I went to high school together, and he happened to know about my mother and about the grace and the power of the precious cross. So after his return from the 9th operation, his brother-in-law told him, "Konstantin, look, I happen to know of a doctor who can make you well. If you promise me that you will not laugh and you will not mock, I will tell you all about this doctor, and you can become well." He said this because he was an unbeliever. He was preparing him. "Very well, tell me, and I promise you not to laugh." The brother-in-law at this point did not even know my mother's whereabouts or even if she was alive. So he said, "I will ask and find out where is this cross that I told you about, and then we will make arrangements to go. Would you go?" He said, "Yes, of course we can go," he answered. He asked around different people, and finally he got in touch with me on the telephone. He introduced himself, reminding me that we were classmates, and he asked, "By the way, where's your mother?" I said, "My mother is in heaven." "Well, where's the precious cross?" I said, "The cross is with me." And he went on to explain about the condition of his colonel brother-in-law, and he gave me all the details, and he asked if they would come to have him blessed with the cross. I said, "Of course you may come," I said, and we set an appointment for a Sunday after church about 12 to 1 o'clock. When they arrived, we visited for a little while, and we started off with the usual typical conversation of things we talk about when we first meet someone. And at some point, the doctor began with his declaration, "Papa, I want you to know that I don't believe in God. I'm an unbeliever. I believe nothing, nothing about God. Nothing about the Panagia, nor the saints, nor the cross, let alone the priests. I don't believe any of it. I consider all these things ridiculous, and I don't believe any of it, and furthermore, I don't have the best relations with priests in general. I happen to believe in a higher power, and nothing more. Now, what you call this higher power is up to you. Of course, I'm aware of different things and metaphysical events that cannot be explained. I know this. So I know that something higher does exist." I spent about 2.5 hours trying to convince him that his belief system is contrary to reality and even harmful, but to no avail. He fought me every step of the way, and we both felt exhausted after all this endless and fruitless conversation. So at the end, I felt compelled to end this conversation with this statement. "My doctor, from what I gather, you're under the impression that I am some kind of a magician, some wizard who reads a few spells and works out some healings. You are dead wrong. I'm an Orthodox priest, and I act according to the statutes of my church. I do what my faith and what my religion teaches. Now, if you accept the things that our Orthodox Church teaches, then we can proceed. If not, then you and I are wasting our time. So, I have two prescriptions to give you. And if we can agree to combine these two medicines together, and you take them with faith and free will, rest assured that you will become well. Otherwise, let's leave well enough alone, and each one of us can go having his own opinion and his way of believing. I have nothing else to tell you. He tells me, go ahead and tell me about these two drugs. But be careful, I said, because these drugs are not like those of your medical profession. They are not made of various poisons and chemicals. The first drug is your own faith. You must believe that it is possible for the grace of the precious cross to make you well. The other drug is my own prayer. I will pray according to how my church teaches me. I will do the readings prescribed by my church, and I will pray a supplication service to the Holy Cross. I will ask for God's grace to work through his precious cross to give you your help. Now, if we can somehow combine these two drugs, then we will succeed. God will listen to us. If you don't want to follow these guidelines, then let's not waste our time. After this approach, he seemed to be somewhat relaxed, calm, and deeply moved. He stood up and he told me, Father, I do believe, and do whatever it takes. I asked him to come towards the icon stand, where he made his cross for the first time in God knows how many years, and he venerated all the icons. I asked him, where do you feel pain at this point? He lifted up his shirt, and I stared in shock. I saw 9 knife wounds on his chest, half on the one side, the rest on the other side. So I touched the precious cross on his chest cavity, and it stuck to it like a suction cup. Now he seemed to be perplexed. Even though he previously said that he believed, he could not come to grip with this attachment of the cross. He was thinking, well, I go along with everything else, but what is this adhesion? Who ever heard of silver sticking to bare skin like a suction cup? He was suspecting some kind of a magnetic energy, so he expressed his suspicion. Father, do I have your permission to take the cross in my hands? I said, of course, I said, and I walked away. While the cross remained suspended on him along with the chain and a number of other jewelry that people offered as vows of their faith and gratefulness, when he saw that the cross with all this weight was hanging on him, he was flabbergasted. Banayim, no, Father, I'm not going to touch it. I don't want to touch it. You do whatever you need to do. So I blessed him, making the sign of the cross on him, and he said, when do you want us to come back again? I said, any time and any day you wish. So we made an appointment for Wednesday afternoon, and they left. The very next day, he phoned me, and he said, Father, last night I was able to eat and drink normally. I slept well, and I feel fine. I said, very well, it looks like our medicine is working. The combination of our drugs is successful. He said, Father, I don't want to wait till Wednesday. Can I please come and see you in about an hour? He came with his entire family, his wife, his mother, his children. They all came to thank me. When he entered the door of the church, he made his cross deeply touched and showing signs of repentance. He proceeded to hug me and kiss my hand and so on. So he repeated the crossings and they left. And here we must mention that two great miracles took place. His physical healing on one hand and his spiritual healing on the other hand. He believed and repented for his unbelief, and not to mention that the spiritual healing is a greater miracle than the physical. And that's why I proceeded to tell you that I personally believe that this is one of the greatest miracles that I ever witnessed, because this man was an unbeliever. When he came for the third crossing, it was the day before his name day, the feast day of St. Constantine and Helen. The next day was his name day, and he would be going to his home village to celebrate. This would be his first visit after being away many, many years due to his long-term illness and due to his demanding occupation. So he decided to spend his name day at the village of his birth. So he went to the village and he was received with great joy and much fanfare from everyone, not only because they hadn't seen him for many, many years, but mostly because they had written him off as a dead man. They showered him with great hospitality and much honor, being his feast day. He ate everything offered to him, grilled meats, baked, barbecued with hot sauces, and he drank plenty of wine, something that the doctors frowned upon. They told him not to even think about, not to even smell it. After he ate and drank exceedingly until 10:30 at night, he was still not content, even though he ate everything in sight, foods prohibited by his medical profession. And unfortunately, he was doing this out of doubt. He was somehow trying to test himself to see if he was truly healed. Unfortunately, even though he saw the miraculous energy of the cross, he saw immediate results, the virus of doubt was still working inside of him. The devil took advantage of this evil seed of doubt and pushed him to an action of medical insanity. What did he do? In order to be totally sure that he was absolutely healed by the miraculous cross, at 10:30 at night, he left from a table